The tow truck parked in front of Shed B. There was a hydraulic whine, and the Buick came out of its snout-up, tail-down posture, settling back on its white walls. The tow driver, old Johnny Parker, came around to unhook it, wheezing around the Pall Mall stuck in his gob. Ennis and Kurt sat in Cruiser D-19, meanwhile, looking at each other. "What the hell we got here?" Ennis asked finally. "A car that can't drive and can't steer cruises into the Jenny station out on Route 32 and right up to the high test pump. No tags. No sticker." An idea struck him. "Registration. You check for that?" "Not on the steering post," Kurt said, opening his door, impatient to get out. The young are always impatient. "Not in the glove compartment either, because there is no glove compartment. There's a handle for one, and there's a latch button, but the button doesn't push, the handle doesn't pull, and the little door doesn't open. It's just stage dressing like everything else on the dashboard. The dashboard itself is bullshit. Cars didn't come with wooden dashboards in the 50s, not American ones, at least." They got out and stood looking at the orphan Buick's back deck. "Trunk?" Ennis asked. "Does that open?" "Yeah. It's not locked. Push the button and it pops open like the trunk of any other car. But it smells lousy." "Lousy how?" "Swampy." "Any dead bodies in there?" "No bodies. No nothing." "No spare tire, not even a jack?" Curtis shook his head. Johnny Parker came over, pulling off his work gloves.
"Be anything else, men?"
Ennis and Kurt shook their heads. Johnny started away, then stopped.
"What the hell is that, anyway? Someone's idea of a joke?"
"We don't know yet," Ennis told him. Johnny nodded.
"Well, you find out. Let me know. Curiosity killed the cat. Satisfaction brought him back. You know?"
"Whole lot of satisfaction," Kurt said automatically. The business about curiosity and the cat was a part of Troop D life, not quite an in-joke, just something that had crept into the day-to-day diction of the job. Ennis and Kurt watched the old man go. "Anything else you want to pass on before we talk to Sergeant Shaindinks?" Ennis asked.
"Yeah,"
Curtis said. "It's earthquake country in there."
"Earthquake country? Just what in the hell does that mean?"
So Curtis told Ennis about a show he'd seen on the PBS station out of Pittsburgh just the week before. By then, a number of people had drifted over. Among them were Phil Candleton, Archie Arcanian, Sandy Dearborn, and Sergeant Shaindinks himself. The program had been about predicting earthquakes. Scientists were a long way from developing a surefire way of doing that, Curtis said, but most of them believed it could be done in time. Because there were forewarnings, precursors. Animals felt them, and quite often people did, too. Dogs got restless and barked to be let outside. Cattle ran around in their stalls or knocked down the fences of their pastures. Caged chickens sometimes flapped so frantically they broke their wings. Some people claimed to hear a high humming sound from the earth 15 or 20 minutes before a big trembler. And if some people could hear that sound, it stood to reason that most animals would hear it even more clearly. Also, it got cold. Not everyone felt these odd pre-earthquake cold pockets, but a great many people did. There was even some meteorological data to support the subjective reports.
"Are you shitting me?"
Tony Shaindinks asked.
"No, indeed," Kurt replied.
"2 hours before the big quake of 1906, temperatures in San Francisco had dropped a full 7 degrees. That was a recorded fact. This, although all other weather conditions, had remained constant."
"Fascinating," Ennis said. "But what's it got to do with the Buick?"